Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of We Have Spoken, the Mandalorian podcast. I am Chuck P., along with my co-host, Mike Grimiel. Mike, what's up, brother?
Hey, man.
We are here to discuss Season 2, Episode 4, The Siege. Before we do that, I just want to remind everyone, if you're listening to the podcast and you have discovered where you can find it, for those who are new to the podcast, you can find it on Buzzsprout, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, you can find it on Google Play, starting probably later this week, because I've been hesitant about paying for the domain. Site was trying to see how far I can go with it free, but there's a couple of places I'm trying to get it up where you have to pay for the year subscription, so I'm going to go ahead and do that, take care of that, so we can have it on Google Play. But it's on Stitcher. It's on TuneIn, the Spotify. TuneIn app. It's on Spotify. So look for it there. Also, you can follow me on like Twitter and Instagram and stuff if you want. I'm gonna start posting some Mandalorian facts here and there, just because, you know, why not?
Right.
I mean,
you know.
I should put that out there in between episodes, like when people are waiting for stuff. If I discover things, I could be like, oh, here's a link to this story.
Or if people wanted to reach out and tell us, hey, you glossed over something important, and I had to try to figure out what the hell it was. Speaking of this, I have this actually happened.
Okay.
I had a message from a listener.
Okay.
And she said, we blew right past the scene at the docks where the woman in the cloak is there, and then she disappears. Now, we find out later that she is one of the Mandalorians without their armor on.
Yeah.
So at the time, though,
Sasha Banks' character.
Right, Sasha Banks' character. But we missed that. We missed discussing that because we automatically figured it out in the course of the episode. But some people didn't put those things together, and they were wondering, hey, who was that person, and why are they there, and then why'd they disappear, and whatever, you know. It's one of those things we need some feedback on. So please don't hesitate to let us know if there's something we missed or if there's something that you feel that we got wrong, or if you just want to elaborate on something that you heard.
We also get a little bit excited when we start talking about things, and I am prone to gloss over stuff, and that's where you come in to like rein me in.
I don't know about you. I'm an absolute professional.
This is true. I forget that I'm working with a trained professional.
Trained
a professional.
Me and the monkeys.
All right. Well, let's get into our episode. Episode 4 of Season 2, entitled The Siege, directed by Carl Weathers. I thought that was pretty interesting. I'd heard something about him directing an episode, and I started thinking about it as I'm watching this one because it's very grief heavy. That's his name, Grief Cargo, I think is his name, Grief Cargo.
I was like, you're like, what the hell? It makes you grieve, because, yes, it's definitely...
Grief Cargo, not Cargo.
This definitely felt like a Carl Weathers directed episode.
Yeah.
Because it was shit.
Also, let's get this out of the way now before people start commenting on it or we forget about it after the show. Yes, we all saw the guy standing in the background during the scene on the base where they came in shooting, and there's apparently an extra or a camera guy, and you see half of him in his blue jeans standing back there. We've seen it. Have you seen it? Did you see it?
I didn't see it.
I didn't see it during the show. I saw it afterwards, and everyone started posting about it. So, yes, we all...
I didn't see it during... What scene was it in?
It was when they were walking into the room with the two Imperial officers at the console, and they were like trying to dump the data.
Right.
And they come in shooting. on on the back, on the, like if you're watching it on the left side of the of your screen, you can see half of an arm and half of a leg of like just a guy standing back there wearing blue jeans, just like hanging out. I mean, it's the Game of Thrones Starbucks coffee cup.
I was about to say, did they have a cup of coffee?
You should have.
Coffee break.
Yeah. But let's dive into the episode. So we start off, Mando's floating through space. Obviously, the Mon Calamari fixing of the ship didn't bode as well as one might have thought, or they thought, because Mando knew as soon as he walked in there with fishing net holding the majority of the ship together, this was not going to last.
No. And we have a little heartwarming scene
it was cute.
Where Mando is like the parent.
Yes, good. Now, you're going to plug that red wire where the blue wire goes in the board. Put the red wire where the blue wire goes in the board, okay? But don't let them touch. See where you took the blue one off? Yes. Now, put the red one. No, don't put the blue one back. Put the red one where the blue one was. And put the blue one where the red one was.
And he's like, wait, he's super, super calm. And
take
like,
the blue wire and put it where the red wire was.
He's got all this patience. He's got all this patience. You're floating in space.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get a 50-year-old Muppet to fix your ship from inside this thing.
Who doesn't really understand English.
It does not understand.
Or basic, as they call it in the Star Wars universe.
Right. Yeah. So then you have, of course, the scene where he touches the wires together and zaps himself. It's all very cute. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the cute stuff.
I mean, they you have to have that in there, I guess, to sell toys.
They're selling toys. They're not selling that to me.
Hell, Baby Yoda is up on the International Space Station right now. He went up with the recent launch of the SpaceX.
Thing's a phenomenon, no doubt. And now that they're having it actually make noises and be a little bit more expressive, great, but I don't know. I just this episode pissed me off, and I'll tell you.
Okay.
I will tell you why.
Tell us how you really feel.
I will tell you why in pieces as we go forward. But
okay,
that little cutesy scene is just kind of part of it.
Got you. Okay, so after trying to fix the ship with Baby Yoda, he realizes he's not going to make it to Corvus without getting some repairs. So they go back to Navarro to go visit Carl Weathers and Cara Dune.
Who's the marshal now.
She is the marshal. There's some Warris. The Warris people were down there raiding what was the forge for the Mandalorians.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they were raiding that forge per se. I think they were using it sort of as a like a hideout.
Maybe so.
Because they had a lot of extra stuff there.
It looked like they were packing a bunch of stuff, too. Maybe they were trying to get out.
And then another cute scene with a fucking ferret.
I don't know if I'd call that cute.
No, I mean, not that they were going to eat it. But then, like, okay, so they're all getting their stuff together, and they're talking, and they're walrus manning and whatnot. And they're getting their bags of goodies. And then the guy's like, oh, I'm going to eat this ferret. Right? And he's about to cut its head off. And that's all, you know, a little bit dark. But,
a little bit.
But then here comes the marshal, and she comes in, and this is Cara Dune, and she comes in, and she shoots everybody and punches everybody and knocks everybody down and saves the day for the ferret. And then, of course, they have the ferret climb up on her shoulder and start fucking rubbing her face and shit. And I'm just like, come on, man. Any wild animal that just got freed from being killed would be gone. I mean, gone.
Is this true?
Long fucking gone. Unnecessary. Just let it run away and be a fucking animal. But no, we got to have some other cute shit climb up on somebody.
Mike is not down with the cuteness.
I think it has its moments, man. But this whole episode was like a fucking Hallmark card. To me,
the whole episode.
I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna get to it.
Okay,
I'm gonna explain it in pieces as we go along. This was another piece. So now we've had two scenes. We have two cute things. Continue.
Okay, so we've made it back to Navarro. The Mandalorian greets Greef Karga and Cara Dune. who is now the Marshal. Greef is the magistrate of Navarro now. He tells him he needs some repairs for the ship. So they're going back through the city. And I don't know if you caught this in the background when they were going to walk into the office or wherever they were talking at. There is an IG-11 statue in the background. I saw that as well. It's like a little tribute to IG-11, I guess.
I didn't see that. No, I'll have to go back and see that.
Yeah, it's quick. It's like it's in the background. It's one of those blink if you miss it scenes. I thought I'd seen it, but I wasn't sure. And then I read about it and someone took a still shot of it and you could see it.
That's cool.
So they go back to this office after walking through the town.
Wait. Okay. He lands.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yes. You're right.
He lands.
Here I am glossing over something.
He lands. Barely.
Yes.
Ship's falling apart. Can't even put the damn, you know, gear. Not the gear, but the
door, the back hatch.
Right. Can't get the hatch down.
Bay
all
doors.
The way. Can't get it all the way to the freaking ground. And here's the happy couple sitting there waving to him and smiling. And that's Cara Dune and fucking Carl Weathers. And I'm just like, wasn't she some hard ass fucking badass shock trooper? Why is she standing there smiling with her hands on her hips like a fucking mom happy to see her kid back from school?
Because she just took out all these war people down in the forge. That's a bunch of bullshit,
man. They're fucking ruining her character. They're ruining her character. Not to say that she can't be happy, but dude, they just, this whole thing, watch it again. The whole, there's a whole lot of smiling and happiness from her. And then it's just like, it does not fit her character.
This is the holiday season.
I don't give a shit. I don't care. Ain't no holidays in Star Wars.
There's the Star Wars holiday special.
And you saw how far that went.
That was abysmal. Ugh, not good.
Okay. So putting that aside.
Okay.
They were getting ready to go in. Carl Weathers says, hey, hook my boy up, fix his ship. Two guys go, all right, we got that. And then one of them kind of looks back sort of ominously.
Yeah, it's like something's up with that guy.
Always.
And we find that out later. But
yes.
So we get into this room and we see a character we hadn't seen since episode one, Mithral, played by Horatio Sanz. Last time you saw him, the Mandalorian picked him up for a bounty, had him frozen in carbonite, and delivered him to Greef Karga. So now he is working off his debt to Greef. It's like how many years?
350 years, yeah. He said. I don't think he's going to live that long.
No. So Greef Karga and Cara Dune convinced the Mandalorian to help him. He was like, look, we're repairing your ship. It's going to take some time. We have this problem we need to help with. So there is an Imperial base on the other side of Navarro that was where Moff Gideon and his stormtroopers came from during the ending of season one, the final two episodes, when they tried to take those guys out. So apparently it's a ragtag base with only maybe a handful of stormtroopers. Apparently it's kind of empty, but they want to blow it up and destroy it to get what's left of the Empire off the planet gone, so they don't have to deal with them.
Yeah, well, that's just based on the information that they got.
Yeah.
So before they can do that, they can't have the kid with them. So they take the kid to what is now a school. It was refurbished from something from season one. It was hard for me to tell. I thought it might have been like a bar, but
yeah, I didn't know what it was.
He said, oh, I didn't expect to see this place. Maybe it belonged to the client, the guy.
Maybe so.
That's what it was. And that's where they had the big fight at the end. Anyway, they go in there and there's a 3PO droid up at the front teaching a bunch of kids, and they bring the little child in, and they put him in a desk and they leave. Now, in the background, the droid is discussing something, and we're going to come back to this later.
Yeah, this will be.
This is after we've covered the episode, but there is a discussion.
It's very important.
And it is an interesting discussion for those who are into the depths of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
And then we have another cute scene where the baby Yoda thiefs a fucking sleeve of cookies from a kid using the Force. He's like, hey, can I have a cookie? And this kid's like,
nah, bro.
And the kid's not even looking at him. The kid is like looking somewhere else. You could tell he's probably looking at the director or card or something.
Or maybe he's paying attention to the lesson.
Nope.
You think the kid's just a bad actor?
I think the kid's a bad actor because he's having to act with a fucking puppet. And then he's like looking. He goes, no. And that's just one line. No, you had to look at a card for no. And then he looks away and he looks back and his cookies are gone. And the child has fucking force thieved his cookies and has eaten one of his little blue cookies.
I think it's like a, it looked like a macaroon or something.
Yeah.
Or a macaron or however you say it.
I don't know how you say it.
There's only one O. I learned that recently.
Yeah, macaron.
I thought it was maybe. Two. All right. So they drop the kid off at this school. They jump into a land speeder and head out to where this Imperial base is in this canyon. They're trying to get in. The controls are melted. So Mithral gets in there with a little torch trying to see if he can figure it out. Meanwhile, the Mandalorian jumps on his rocket pack, flies up there.
He's like, oh, y'all forgot I had a rocket attached to my back?
Got a rocket pack.
I'll be up here in a second.
Go, rocket, go. So he goes up to the top, takes out some stormtroopers, opens up the elevator. They all go up. And they're looking for a reactor that they can use to overload and destroy the whole base.
Yeah. So he flies up to the top. They're down there trying to get the door open. They hear some stuff. And then suddenly a stormtrooper just falls out the sky, lands next to him, full armor. And then the door opens and they go, oh, we'll just get in here and we'll go. Obviously, this is fine.
Yeah.
So they go up.
Shouldn't be a problem.
And they get to the top and there's a bunch of bodies of stormtroopers laying around. And they're like, and Mando's like, oh, yeah, you know, just a couple guys, right? You know, it's like,
They
got like a space Humvee up there.
Yeah.
And Mithral's like, oh, we could get so much money for this from the black market. And, you know, foreshadowing.
Yeah.
But
you know something's going to happen with that ship.
But anyway, so they go into the command center and sneak up on the guy that's, you know, I guess would be the command. Not so much he's in charge, but I guess he would be sort of like your communications hub.
Yeah, because he's watching
the screens and he's, you know, checking the security cameras and having a coffee and a donut.
Hey, hey you guys.
Cargo bay.
I lost communication. What's going on?
I'm not getting up. Anyway, so they go in there. Cara Dune puts him in a sleeper hold.
One of them MMA moves, man. She just wrapped him up.
Drops him to the ground. They get some stuff off of him. And you know, Carl Weathers goes, this will come in handy. And it was a little metal cylinder.
Yeah. I thought he was about to stab somebody with it. Like, all right, yeah, cool. But no.
Such a Carl Weathers directed episode. Everything's overdone, overacted. Shit.
Can we just agree Carl Weathers was never a great actor? I mean.
No, he was not.
Come on.
He was not.
Chubbs.
Best thing he's done so far is.
Apollo Creed.
Hey, baby. Do the magic hands.
Do the magic hands, baby.
Hey, baby.
So after they leave the security room, they make it to where the generator is or whatever it is they're trying to blow up. They get Mithral to go over there and start it. Alarms start going off instantly after they've set it to the blow up. And I think they said they had like 10 minutes or something to get out of there.
No, they go in there and it's like an open heat port. I mean, essentially it's lava at the bottom and it's a heat exhaust for the lava. And they go, okay, we're going to go over here and we're going to get rid of all the coolant for the reactor. Because once that's done and then that heat starts getting to the reactor, the whole thing's going to go. And you have a joke made about something that has been discussed outside of Star Wars for so long. He says, there's not even a handrail or a security rail here. Everywhere. There's no fucking handrails or security guards or nothing. And he's like, there's not even a railing here. And I laughed because, like, you know.
When Obi-Wan went and turned off the tractor beam.
Like, who builds all that shit without a rail? I mean, I think Robot Chicken even did something about it during one of their episodes. Be like, I just want a rail, man.
I just want some safety right here.
Something I can lean against.
OSHA would shut those people down in a heartbeat if they came in there.
I mean, for real. Yeah, everything's just without railings.
Yeah.
And he goes, and it's in the weirdest place to put some sort of control. Yeah. Why wouldn't they just put it right there, right next to the side?
Yeah, where you walk out on that platform and you can just walk up to it instead of, no, we got to make it to where you have to go on this little bitty ledge and walk around to
It's like playing a video game or something.
Maybe they did it on purpose. Like, if anyone wants to destroy this base, they've got to walk out on this ledge with no railing and go hit these buttons.
But why would you even make that? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Plot device. Anyway, so they drain all the coolant, and then they say, you know, how long before it blows up? They say, 10 minutes. Again, anytime
somebody says
units of time that are something that we use in our daily life, I'm just like, lazy. Come up with something space, man. Yeah,
10 parsecs or something.
Use some fucking space shit.
Do something. Create your own time.
Yeah. You made your own universe. You can't make your own time. What the fuck's wrong with y'all?
This is true. So they bail from there. They're trying to get off the base, and they're avoiding stormtroopers when they can, and they enter into this, and they come around the corner and go into this room where these two Imperial officers, since all the bells and whistles have sound off, they're trying to dump data out of this computer.
Right.
So they see the Mandalorian and his crew come around the corner. They start shooting him, and one Imperial officer tells the other one, destroy it, just destroy it. So he starts shooting the console.
Right.
So Mandalorian and everyone get around some corners. They take those guys out, and as they walk in, they notice something on the wall, and there's this row of cylinders with bodies in them.
Yeah, and you can't really see them. They're just sort of like amorphous shapes, a little bit, recessed into the background. And it's hard to see what they are, but you can just tell there's something in there. And then they say, this isn't a forward base. This is a test facility.
It's a laboratory.
Laboratory, a test facility.
Yeah. And then they discover a transmission from the doctor from season one, Dr. Pershing. And he's referring to transfusing the blood of the package or something like that, or the candidate.
He's talking about giving the blood of the child to a candidate.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
It's because of the high M count.
Replicated the results of the subsequent trials, which also resulted in catastrophic failure. There were promising effects for an entire fortnight, but then, sadly, the body rejected the blood. I highly doubt we'll find a donor with a higher M count, though. I recommend that we suspend all experimentation. I fear that the volunteer will meet the same regrettable fate if we proceed with the transfusion. Unfortunately, we have exhausted our initial supply of blood. The child is small, and I was only able to harvest a limited amount without killing him. If these experiments are to continue as requested, we would again require access to the donor.
Which is midichlorian.
Has to be midichlorian.
Has to be midichlorian and can't be anything else. And if you don't know what that is, count yourself lucky. But midichlorians in, the Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace.
They discuss midichlorians are in what's in people's blood that gives them force abilities.
That's what the force is. It's not a...
It's not a religion that everybody can learn. You have to have a predetermined amount of midichlorians in your blood.
It's not as Obi-Wan described in episode 4. It's the energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and binds us.
Yep.
It should have been. It's these little things that live in your blood, apparently, now.
Stupid.
So they discover this, and they see this message, and the Mandalorian is instantly like, this message must be old. Moff Gideon is dead. And Mithril looks at the records and goes, nope, this is from 3 days ago.
Another usage of current time application.
Yeah.
3 days.
Dun, dun, dun.
Stupid.
So at that point, Mandalorian realizes he didn't die when his TIE fighter crashed.
Right.
And then stormtroopers come in. They start shooting. They're trying to blast their way out. Cara Dune tells the Mandalorian, take your rocket pack and get out of here. We'll make our way down to the land speeder because it'll be faster for him to get out.
Right. Yeah, because he wants to get back to the town, get to the child.
Get the child.
Make sure that nobody, obviously there was enough Imperial forces there in that location. So what's to say that there wouldn't be any that would be kind of surveilling the town that would, be able to go in there and get the kid because he was just, in a schoolroom without any security.
Yes.
But here's something.
And there's a musical thing going back to the cylinders and the bodies in there we'll discuss also after we recap the episode.
So these are the worst trained fucking stormtroopers ever.
They're just bad, especially now that they're not using – well, the clones were a little bit more of sharpshooters in the prequels. I think as they started reverting from clones to normal people, by the time they got to episode 4, I guess they just got bad shots. I don't know. But these guys are really horrible.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that they can't shoot. They don't understand basic tactics.
No.
They just come running into the room and stand in the middle of the room like, get them. And I'm like, Hide, dummy. Shoot from behind the wall like they're doing to you.
Exactly. Well, one did. Remember, one was hanging around in the corner, and he tried to jump out and surprise him, and Carradine grabbed him and just broke
well,
his neck.
Don't surprise him like, ha-ha, and then shoot him. Yeah. Surprise him with a gun.
Yeah.
Shoot him.
That works better.
Works way better. But I guess it's like, I don't know. Are they not? Are they regular people, or are they like copies of the clones? Because it might be like
no, because I think they stopped using clones by the time you reach episode 4, and it is now they're drafting people into the Empire, or it's clones, but the clones facilities have shut down, so these are what are left of the clones, and they're not maybe as sharp as they were. Because I know there's a joke in The Force Awakens about using clones again, because Kylo Ren made a comment about by the stormtroopers are like being bad shots or something like that. So maybe we should start using clone troopers again. And it was like, ooh, we talk about clone troopers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it was just making a copy of a copy. It's kind of like a bad key. You know, you get a copy of a copy of a key. It doesn't work quite as well.
Exactly.
And anybody that's ever seen Multiplicity.
Yes.
With Michael Keaton.
We went that deep. Okay.
Michael Keaton. I love that movie.
It's not bad.
It's so funny when he gets to the last one and he's definitely not as slick as the other ones.
No.
Dumb.
Dumb. Very dumb. So Mandalorian takes off on his jetpack. The other guys make it back to the bay where they entered from the elevator, and there's stormtroopers there.
Ooh. I'm sorry. Before we start this, because this is about to go like crazy.
Okay.
The scene where Mando flies up out of the exhaust port or the exhaust, I guess, hole, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets to the top, right? Shoots a couple dudes. And then you see him with his thumb, like double click.
Yeah.
And the jetpack goes like extra fast, right? And we had talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Is it something that he's using his will? Okay, so apparently there is some hand controls. Maybe it is.
I think it's linked to that gauntlet that's on his
wrist. Yeah, but he's using, maybe it's sort of like the old Nintendo glove. The power glove.
The power glove, yes.
Anyway, he hits you see him, he double clicks it, click, click, and the thing goes, pow, and he's gone, right? So there's one of the questions we had discussed, there's some answering to it right there. Controls might be a little bit more handheld than before, than what I thought.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, go.
All right, so they get to the bay. They're surrounded by stormtroopers that have come out of the elevator. Cara Dune makes her way to that transport ship that Mithral had pointed out would make great money on the black market. She gets it. Everybody jumps in there. They dive off of that thing onto the ground, crushing the land speeder, taking off through the canyon, and then a chase ensues, which I thought was super cool. Biker scouts show up and jump on the bikers.
The biker scouts coming out and going down the mountainside
was
the coolest part of the entire fight. And I think it was because, like, one of the things that I had always wondered is, like, why do all these things stay so low to the ground? I mean, they can obviously fly.
Yeah.
You know, why don't they go up? Well, there's your answer. They cannot. It's probably part of the construction. They're not made to fly like that. So these guys go cruising down the hill or cruising down the mountainside or whatever, and they're, you know, the ass end of the thing is dragging and stuff, and they're having to maneuver, and I'm just like, okay. That's really cool looking.
Yeah.
Because it really refines the way you see some of these things. Because not everything can just fly away.
This is true.
You know? But I can say this. Here's another scene I hated. not that scene.
Things that
when she goes and jumps in the giant Humvee, right?
Okay.
She's got to talk to, come on, you know, come on, girl, show me what you got. And I'm just like, lame. Everything with her was lame. Everything's a fucking, a punchline or something like that. There's okay. always some line. And she backs up and, you know, she could have just fucking moved in front of them, blocked the guys from being able to shoot them, and they could have gotten in, you know? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She backed up, and she's like, hey, run through all that laser fire and get in this fucking thing with me. Are you guys hurrying up? You know, you guys going to stay there forever? Some other fucking lame-ass throwaway line they got to have in every fucking Star Wars scene. And she could have just driven in front. She could have used the giant tank to block the lasers so the guys could have fucking leisurely, they could have moonwalked into the goddamn thing. But no, we got to, I get mad when there's a lot.
No, really?
There's a lot of logistical dumb shittery in this episode.
Dumb shittery. Okay. So the biker chase ensues. They take bikers out, think they're getting away, and then lo and behold, four TIE fighters take off from the base to come down to try to stop him as well. So they're trying to take out the TIE fighters. I think they take out one. It feels like they may have met their match, and then lo and behold, laser fire from the skies, and here comes the Razor Crest, all repaired, flying up to save the day.
Yeah, it's been like a day.
It's been like a day. Pretty much. I mean,
ship's been fixed less than a day.
How can we have those people that fix these spaceships come to Earth and show mechanics here how to fix cars in like an hour?
No kidding.
That would be great.
That'd be great. Here, I want to remember. I told you I had a lot of things that pissed me off.
All right. Can we finish the synopsis?
Fuck no.
Okay. All right.
They're going They're going through the canyon.
Yes.
The biker scouts are in the canyon with them.
I like the little foot accelerator. Like hit the little accelerator. Yeah. Little call back to Jedi.
That's great. That's all great.
Okay.
Why is it so hard to hit them? They're in a fucking canyon. Just shoot straight down the middle. You'll hit them.
Well, as they've shown,
he's shooting no fucking walls up at the top. What is he doing? He's the worst.
You talking about the TIE fighters?
Carl Weathers can't shoot for shit.
Well, I mean,
he can't shoot. He's you want to come back here and try? Lame. So fucking lame. Fucking piss me off, man. Because there's so many cool things in this episode, and every time there'd be something cool, it would be some dumb shit like that, and it would take me right out of it, and I hated it.
All right. Well, we're going to try to find some cool things that you did.
All right. Continue.
So the Mandalorian swoops in, saves the day. They ask if they could buy him a drink, but he says no. He's got to get to Corvus. He's got to take care of his mission with the child and get him to the Jedi. So he takes off, and then after that, you see one of the pilots from the last episode two, one of the X-Wing pilots, show up to investigate what had happened. And as he's walking out, he talks to Cara Dune, and he mentions that something is brewing out here, and we need to put a stop to it. So there's something going on these Outer Rim planets that the New Republic's starting to pick up on. And he starts talking to her about Alderaan and, like, you know, who did she lose from there? And she tells him, I lost everyone.
No shit. The whole fucking planet blew up.
Yeah.
Did you lose anybody? No, motherfucker.
Nah, bro,
my people weren't on the planet. I'm from there, but none of my people were on it. What kind of dumbass fucking shit is that?
Yeah. So he leaves her a medal. I don't know what that medal was for.
It's probably a communicator.
Maybe so. Or just like, hey, sorry for your planet loss. Here's
a piece of metal. Here's some more dumb shit for you.
So he walks off. She stares at it for a bit, and she walks off, just pretty much ignoring it. And then we shoot to a classic Star Wars shot of the underbelly of a Star Destroyer or something of that nature flying. Right. You see this woman talking to one of the people who were the mechanics at the beginning of the show, the guy that turned around, the little alien fish-looking dude,
right,
saying that he did place a tracker on the Razor Crest so they can follow it.
Mm-hmm.
So after talking to him, she walks into this room. Lo and behold, Moff Gideon standing there. Looked like he's wearing Darth Vader armor for a second. and gives him the information, turns around, and you look, and he's in this room with nothing but figures in these stalls standing there. Now, what these figures are, and now officially canon, are Dark Troopers. Dark Troopers are kind of a hybrid between a clone trooper and a droid from the Trade Federation. They're not a cyborg, but kind of a cyborg. Kind of indestructible. These are really badass Dark Troopers. They initially appeared in a Star Wars game called Dark Forces, which is no longer canon, but now these characters are canon. So a lot of people online were thinking that the bodies that were in the tubes were what they were using for the Stormtrooper armor, but that's not the case. These are Dark Troopers. They're different. Now, getting back to that scene with these bodies in there.
Right.
I'm going to say, and a lot of people are saying this as well, so I don't feel like I'm jumping out off a ledge on here, that the reason they're trying to get the blood transfusion from the child, to get the child there, to get a higher M count, to get the midichlorians out, is to use to bring back the Emperor. Those clones are Snoke.
Oh.
And you didn't think about that, did you?
I didn't.
And this is the reason why this could be. This, I'm going to play a little music bed right here. This is from The Force Awakens. This is Snoke's theme from that movie. So just listen to this for a second. Very foreboding.
Yes.
Okay. Now, this is from episode 4. This track is of the Mandalorian. This track is called Experiment. Okay? This is the music they played when they were realizing there's bodies in these vats.
That sounds a lot like it.
Sounds a lot like the Snoke theme, doesn't it?
It sure does. And, you know, now that you think about it, there was, you can't see the bodies. You can't really tell what it is, but.
No.
But
when you start thinking about it, they're trying to take a blood transfusion. They're looking for a high M count.
They're trying
test subjects.
They're trying to bring back who?
So in episode 9, it's revealed that Snoke was a failed clone of the Emperor. When Kylo Ren at the beginning of the movie goes to the planet Exegol and finds out the Emperor is in this temple, he walks past a bunch of vats with a bunch of Snoke clones. All these were failed clones. Snoke himself was the most successful clone that survived the process that was closest to bringing the Emperor back.
Okay. That was okay. Because when you said Snoke in there, I was like, wait, wouldn't it be the Emperor because he was a clone? Or a clone of the Emperor, but now that makes more sense.
Yeah.
That is quite the Easter egg.
It's a big Easter egg. I didn't notice big the music bed.
Egg.
Yeah. I didn't notice the music bed. Someone on Twitter pointed that out. So I went and listened to it and I was like, whoa shit. Okay. He's correct. That's the same theme.
It is. And that changes
a lot
of things. But that's also man, that's you know, you're wondering why they're so adamant about finding this force sensitive child. But I mean, like they said in that message that they find, you know, they're not going to find a higher M count.
No.
Than the child. Unless I guess they were
unless
to track down what?
Luke
or something.
Luke and Leia would be the only two people left in the universe with that high.
This was right after Luke had just, you know, aced the fucking Emperor.
Yeah.
So,
or so we thought.
Well, I mean, he did.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's pretty cool. That's pretty interesting. I did not pick up on that.
That was literally the first thing I thought before I even read about the music cues. When I saw the bodies, I'm like, holy shit, they're linking this to the new trilogy. Like, that's Snoke. That's going to be Snoke.
See, I just was thinking they were trying to create force capable troops or some sort of force capable group of warriors or something.
Yeah.
But, I mean, which they are.
Yeah, but for sure.
For a different purpose. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And another thing that they do that links this series to the Star Wars movie, specifically Solo, A Star Wars Story, is in that classroom scene with the C-3PO droid giving them a lesson. He talks about Coruscant. Now, these things you can't really hear because there's music playing in the background, and they kind of fade out the voices. The only way you're going to understand any of this, when you watch it, you have to put on the subtitles, because the subtitles will spell it out and tell you everything the droid is saying, what the kids are replying to. And it basically, they start talking about the Kessel Run, and specifically the maelstrom that is there that they had to fly through.
Right.
Now, the I want to read it from here because I don't want to butcher it. So the maelstrom surrounds Kessel and its three moons. As you learned yesterday, this is the droid talking, there are many systems in this galaxy. How many orbits are in the Kessel system? One of the kids answer, two. The droid says, yes, very good. And the third moon of Kessel rotates its outer planet. You see, the moon here travels in its same orbit. Now, what that means is
Kessel.
One of Kessel's moons rotates Kessel itself, rotates the planet. Right.
Kessel orbits the moon as opposed to the moon orbiting Kessel.
So the system is two orbits, which seems to imply the orbit of Kessel is changed depending on when it's interacting with this moon that moves it. So that makes a very small opening through the maelstrom to get through there to get to Kessel, which in turn is the Kessel Run.
Right.
Because you have to, it has to be at a certain time that space is open in the maelstrom for you to get through it.
But there's also a time when Kessel is not in the maelstrom, is what the point was.
Yes.
And if you're trying to visualize this.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Imagine a figure eight pattern. And that is what Kessel takes. It has its normal, orbit, and then it, whenever it is impacted by that third moon, it then orbits that moon, and yes, it makes a loop around that moon, and then back into its previous orbit. So it makes a very large and long figure eight.
So it goes through that pathway outside of the maelstrom,
right,
for that orbit, and makes its way back. So you have a limited time that you can get to Kessel without dealing with the maelstrom.
Right.
If you don't get it in time, then you have to
go through that maelstrom.
You got to go through the maelstrom.
Right, but the reason that they talk about it fixing a problem is in one of the other episodes of movies, they discuss Kessel being not in the maelstrom. And that's why this thing sort of, I guess, fixes a hole.
Yeah, this is from the Clone Wars in season 7. There was a Solo had already established that the Akkadi's maelstrom made it impossible to jump to Kessel normally because of all the gravity wells prevented regular hyperspace travel. In other words, the space storm was the reason why the Kessel Run had to happen at all. But why was the maelstrom not there in Clone Wars and Rebels? In 2018. A rep from Lucasfilm drew up a suggested map that suggested the Kessel had two different orbits depending on what time of year. So that was just a suggestion this dude wrote up in 2018 that was working for Lucasfilm. So they took that theory and just made it canon in this episode.
Well, now that I'm thinking about it, then my figure eight thing probably doesn't make as much sense.
It's not really a figure eight the way... Like, if the link I sent you about it,
right?
Like, the thing that he drew is kind of like the maelstrom's all blue around it, and then right, you have Kessel in the middle with the moons orbiting it. So,
yeah, but that's only two of the three moons.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. So Kessel is not fixed. It's moving, you know, just like our planet orbits the sun. Flat earthers, if you're listening, you're an idiot.
That's a whole nother podcast.
Whole nother podcast. So it is moving, and the maelstrom stays, I guess, with it around
maybe it's a fixed
moon.
Orbit around it.
I'm not sure.
But there's an open space in the maelstrom Kessel comes out.
And then when it interacts with this third moon, which apparently is not always or not fully, during its orbit, portions of its orbit.
Yeah.
It would be outside of the maelstrom for however long that would take.
Yeah. But there you go. That is episode 4 of The Siege, and that's our little Easter egg tidbit afterwards talking about those couple things, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
The whole music bed. And Ludwig Göransson, that dude is – his soundtrack for the show is always amazing. He steps up his game all the time. Dude is writing legit music for this show. I'm not saying he's going to be the next John Williams, but he's writing some really cool scores for this series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That's one of the things about Star Wars, though, is it's like, you know, the thematics that they use – the music for, you know,
yeah,
to create the moods and everything. It's iconic.
Dude, a lot of people would probably agree, but still there's some lovers of the new trilogy out there. Episode 9 was horrible. On repeat watching, episode 9 does not hold up.
I can't watch it.
Yeah. But that first trailer looked amazing, and what made it amazing was John Williams' score.
Right.
Like, I remember watching that trailer for the first time, and I got goosebumps just from the music.
Right.
Because it's John Williams.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's a supercut. It's a
yeah. It's you're it, seeing it's all the cool the best, scenes.
It's all these cool things, and it's not. And then we're gonna shit on it. They don't tell you that.
Did you ever read the leaked script that the original director for episode 9, Colin Trevorrow, wanted to use?
No.
Oh, dude, you'll be so mad because the script is really good.
Oh, I'm sure it would be. Anything really would be better than that. Anything, I don't want to say anything, but
it had its moments, but overall.
Anything that would have been part of what The Last Jedi had created or started would have been great.
Oh, I mean, that was straight up J.J. Abrams pissing on The Last Jedi because Rian Johnson pissed on Force Awakens. It was like, we're going to do this.
I mean, I didn't hate The Force Awakens. I thought it was episode four for the new generation. It was episode 4. It was A New Hope.
It's still watchable. It's still good.
It is. But just like Empire was the best of the original trilogy, Last Jedi is the best of the new trilogy.
Absolutely.
And there is no best of the prequels because they're all awful.
They do not hold up. If you go watch episode 1 on a really nice 4K television,
nope,
those special effects are horrible.
Not so special.
Ooh, man, they are not good.
We stood in line for that.
We did. We did for 3 days. We camped out at the theater to buy tickets
to see that.
And not only did we buy tickets for the midnight showing, we bought tickets for three of the screenings the following day.
You did that. I only had one.
Oh, yeah,
You went back and watched that turd.
I went back the first show the next morning to be like, maybe there's more that was better besides the spirit race and the mall fight, but no, there wasn't.
Nope, it was trash.
Taxation of trade routes, but this was a kids' movie. But you're talking about taxation of trade routes.
Just that whole thing. There's so many terrible things. How come nobody else runs fast like they did in the first episode?
But they only did it in the first episode.
I know.
They never did it again. Like, hey, I'm going to introduce this cool, super fast flash force power.
Force sprint. They did a force sprint in the first one, and there's just like,
same thing.
Never did it again.
It's the same thing with Qui-Gon sticking the lightsaber through the door. Like, nobody's done that again either. Like, that is... Because we were all just like, what the... Like, why didn't we think of that before? We're going to melt through these doors. I don't remember seeing that.
I feel like I've seen something...
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not remembering
it. We saw it in episode 9 or whatever the episode was where the Darksaber cut out of the... The TIE Fighter.
Episode 8, yeah. But he was just cutting a hole.
Sure.
Like, Qui-Gon was just taking it and just kind of like turning it and just like heating up that door and just like making the whole thing melt.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was
nobody ever did that. Yeah. No. I was just thinking about cutting.
There were some super cool things in Phantom Menace, but then they just never did anything with it and you never saw it again.
Yeah. Never. Ever. Never discussed it again.
Yeah. It's like when Les Miles was a coach at LSU and you saw this one super cool play that they would pull off and gain like 85 yards on it, and then you never saw that play ever again.
We'll never do it again.
Like, well, all right, that worked. Put it in the book. We're done.
They'll never fall for it again, and we'll never try it again.
That's it.
But they'll think we're gonna.
If we don't try, then we won't fail at it. All right, so that's episode 4 of The Siege. I did tell you before this, I do know the title of the next episode. I mean,
is it Cara Dune runs like a fucking refrigerator falling off the back of a truck?
No, it is not.
She runs like a refrigerator falling off the back of a truck.
She's not graceful.
Nimble or graceful.
No.
No.
And I think we were both kind of right about this episode. I thought it was going to be like a standalone. You thought it might continue the storyline. It kind of did a little bit of both.
Yeah, I'm 0-for 2 on predicting the next episode. You said they're going to have to stop and they're going to have to get the ship fixed. You were correct. You said it was going to be mostly a standalone episode.
Yeah.
You were also correct.
Just if they follow the pattern from last season. It looks like they're doing that.
Yeah, so I'm 0-for-2 on guessing.
Well, the title of the next episode might help you predict what's going on.
Is it Ahsoka Tano brings them a Coke?
Ahsoka Tano and a bag of chips.
Yeah.
No, the episode is called The Jedi.
Well, there you go.
There you go. So and also another thing I learned, as of this episode, we have seen every scene of The Mandalorian that was shown in trailers. The three trailers they released, I think it was three, were only scenes from the first 4 episodes. Mm. So from here on out, we don't know what's going on.
I don't think they know what's going on either.
I think they did it on purpose so that way they wouldn't accidentally reveal Ahsoka Tano or anything else that's going to happen. I think they're trying to keep that as secret as possible to reveal when she shows up, which looks like it'll be this Friday. So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah.
The Jedi.
That's going to blow up. That's going to be huge.
Well, I'm not going to predict shit because, again, 0-for.
Yeah.
I'm 0-for-2. But,
well, I mean, you know, don't say you're 0-for.
I am 0-for. I said, he's not going to find Mandalorians. Bam. Mandalorians. I said, I think the ship's okay. He's got it in hyperspeed. It'll be fine. Nope. 0-for. I'm like Matt Ryan.
Oh, man.
0-for touchdowns today.
At least you didn't get sacked 8 times.
Saints.
Yeah, Saints. All right, Saints. All right, kids. That's it for this episode of We Have Spoken.
I hated it.
Mike really hated it. Well, right, Mike liked it, but hated all the cute parts.
I hate all the cute parts. The pieces of the story, especially the stuff that Charles brought up at the end, very cool. I liked that. But I just feel like they really dropped the ball on setting the tone of some of these characters because, like, I get the Carl Weathers character is supposed to be kind of sort of sideways, like, comedy. But she was from fucking Alderaan, which is gone. Smoked, yeah. Right?
But it's been going for a while. She's had time to grieve.
I'm just saying. Okay. Yes, she has time to grieve. But they show her in like this kind of small town sheriff mindset, and she's all just smiley and happy. And I'm just like, weren't you on the run? I mean, like, I guess you're happy you're not on the run anymore or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And then at the end when she's talking to the X-Wing pilot, she's kind of like she's feeding the little fucking ferret. There's the ferret again. And throwing a little shit to the ferret. And she's all of a sudden, after being all smiley and whatnot and joking a whole damn episode, now she's all pensive because there's an X-Wing guy there. And she's like, I'm pensive. Look at me. I'm feeding the ferret. And then he asks her about coming and joining him. And she's like, I'm not a joiner. Bullshit. You joined to be the fucking marshal of this town. You join the, you know, shock troops or whatever you were in. You're a joiner. You got that shit on your arm. You don't lie. You know, I just feel like when they wrote the dialogue for this, they missed some opportunities to create a different vibe.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I need to go back. I've only watched it twice.
Yeah.
I watched it here at work during lunch.
I hope I've ruined it for you.
Well, I'll go back and watch it tonight.
Watch it and watch when the guy says, "Did you lose anybody?" If you don't think in your head, fuck you. The whole planet's gone.
I did think that. I was like, that's kind of a dick question
what
to ask.
What a dick fucking thing to say.
Did you lose anyone? The whole planet is gone.
It's gone. I lost everybody. It's so predictable of a fucking
response. It's not like they knew disaster was coming and they could get off the planet.
That's the thing.
The Death Star rode it and blew it up.
How fucking predictable is that response, though?
Yeah.
It's like, I lost everybody. Well, no shit. The planet's gone. Fuck you for asking it. And fuck you for saying something so lame. Shit, it'd have been better if she'd have been like, no, my mom's fine.
No, my mom made a Dantooine. Everything's cool.
She was off planet at the time getting groceries.
Because we have no grocery stores in Alderaan.
Oh, my God.
All right, so that's it. We're out of here until next week. I am Chuck P. Mike Grimion, thank you, sir, for being here.
Boo.
Go back and watch the episode again, people. See if you hate it as much as Mike. Don't forget, check out the podcast on wherever you find podcasts, Buzzsprout, and all that stuff. Until next time, Chuck P. Mike Grim, we have spoken. This is the way.